And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, and tonight I want to talk about impeachment. There are a number of things that people think may be grounds for impeachment of this president. Warrantless wiretapping, systematic torture, putting American citizens in jail without trial or access to an attorney. Indeed, what's going on at Guantanamo Bay, some say, is grounds for impeachment. And what about Dick Cheney? Did he indeed send Scooter Libby to out a CIA agent, an act which George Herbert Walker Bush said in another context was a traitorous act to out a CIA agent? And if he did, and if Scooter Libby covered it up, as Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, has said, if George Bush pardons Scooter Libby, maybe we should impeach Dick Cheney. Or how about Alberto Gonzalez, our attorney general, who doesn't seem to recall much of anything with regard to the firing of U.S. prosecutors, which itself is a crime under the Hatch Act to do so for political reasons. That's why Monica Goodling indeed pled the Fifth. There are a lot of issues here, and maybe it's all just a crazy idea. It's too much politics. It's not enough a question of law. We're going to be discussing the issue of impeachment in Virginia at George Mason University Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. I want to encourage all of you to attend to that. But for now, I'm going to discuss the issue with a man who knows a lot about impeachment. His name is Gil Davis. He's a former federal prosecutor under Richard Nixon. In fact, he prosecuted one, a high-up official in the Nixon government. But he's perhaps most famous for being a lawyer for Paula Jones. That's right, the Paula Jones, the one who sued Bill Clinton for sexual harassment. We had Gil Davis take the case all the way up to the United States Supreme Court to say in a 9-0 opinion, you can sue a sitting president. Gil Davis is of the opinion that Bill Clinton should have been impeached. He's not quite certain yet on George W. Bush. Gil Davis, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be here.
Well, before we get into the current president, let's talk about some past cases of impeachment. There have been two in our lifetimes. The first is Richard Nixon. Now, articles of impeachment were approved by the House Judiciary Committee.
But not voted on the floor because he resigned.
Although I think most scholars believe he would have been impeached.
I think he would have been
and he would have been convicted and removed from office.
Most likely.
Do you think that would have been a just, proper decision on the U.S. Constitution?
I think so. The suborning of perjury by others, the use of federal Big Brother agencies like the tax folks to investigate tax returns of political opponents. These things are pretty sorry things. It's an unfortunate thing. Richard Nixon had some commendable things that he did, but I think he would have been, for reasons that most people thought at the time, he would have been convicted.
Now, I wasn't politically active at the time of Watergate. You certainly were. What were people saying at that time? At the time of 1974, impeachment hadn't been used since the trial of Andrew Johnson in the 1860s, so
right.
Virtually no one was alive who could remember that.
Sure.
It was certainly seen as an extraordinary act by the House Judiciary Committee. I'd just be curious to know, historically, you were working at that time for the Nixon White House as an assistant U.S. attorney. What did people say about impeachment in those days?
Well, first, it was a build-up, because there were a lot of things that the administration just didn't come forth with. It would have been much better for them, I think, had they let it all out at one time rather than let it come out like a striptease act, you know, a little bit here and a little there. And the unfortunate thing is that that people became very much, I mean, the war was in play here too. They were not happy. We have the situation today where people aren't happy with the Iraq war, a lot of them. And so the president also had gone before the American people and said, I'm not a crook, I didn't do these things, and it turns out that he did. And then there were some suspicious things on the 18-minute gap in the tape. So there's a lot of public atmosphere that was very either discouraged or quite shocked and felt that this was going to have to come to an end.
Was it hard as an active Republican and someone appointed by President Nixon, was it hard for Republicans in particular to turn against their president, even though he had done these crimes?
Well, sure. You always, politically, the two great parties, you support one or the other. And yes, people were upset. I think they were also tired of the war, too. There was a lot of demonstrations that had been ever increasing, much more than the atmosphere even today. I mean, people think today is everyone is all upset about the Iraq war. Has nothing close to the atmosphere as it was at that time. There were people very strong on each side, and demonstrations, huge ones. Both ways.
I think because we have no draft today, people
want. I think that's probably a factor.
Involved, those that are fighting. I just had a veteran on yesterday, in fact, and I think sometimes we have a few people taking the sacrifice for most of us there. Let me move on to Bill Clinton, the case that you were most involved with.
Sure.
I know the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 in your favor. I disagree. I have that right. I'll be the 10th dissenting justice. I think to sue a president for a civil wrong conducted before he was president, I think that can wait until after the 8 years. I have no problem with suing a president for things done in office. I think that actions done as president of the United States, those are the kinds of things that I think should be impeachable offenses. But it seems to me that if you can sue a president for a civil wrong committed while he's president, why couldn't somebody go up, I don't care whether it's true or false, and say, George Bush sold me cocaine back in 1996, they can get a deposition, and then they can ask the president under oath, the current president, have you ever snorted cocaine? Now, this president hasn't admitted whether he's done it or not. You get him a nice little perjury trap. Wouldn't we be doing the exact same thing that you did with Paula Jones?
Well, no, because first of all, the act of suing is the one is one part of a lawsuit. Depositions and other things are other parts of it. The court has various remedies to continue cases, to protect the president. In fact, in this case, as you probably recall, the judge came to the deposition, almost unheard of that a judge would do that. And so, no, you don't throw a blanket over it at the beginning, and that was what the president was contending.
Couldn't it have been held 2 months after he left office?
No, because you have statute of limitations problems.
Well, what if told the statute of limitations?
Well,
I mean, we do that all the time.
Yes, but you'd have to have an act of Congress to do that. She had brought her suit under the Civil Rights Act about 3 days before that expired, had an earlier 120 days under the Equal Opportunity Act, which had long since gone before I even got into the case.
Gil, I mean, you and I are both lawyers. I'm sure you've had a case where people have told, as an agreement, the statute of limitations. You make a deal.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't Bill Clinton willing to do that?
No.
Oh, he wasn't?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, when we tried to negotiate a settlement right before we sued, it would only have been no money. Would just have been a statement that the president, and he agreed to make a statement. And we had certain language. The problem was that they said a tolling agreement is a deal killer here. We want this matter over with. We want it over with now.
So I didn't know that. That's an historic mistake of this president.
Yeah, it was, I think. And another thing that happened is that I told Bob Bennett in the afternoon of, I think it was Thursday afternoon, I think the statute probably ran on either Saturday or Sunday, which it might have got it into Monday. But we'd been there for 3 days. The press was after everybody, as you can imagine. It was a scrum, and so I said, we've got to file it. And Bob said to me, Joe, he said, consistent with your duty to your client, he's the president of the United States, and you owe him every courtesy that you can give him, and you need to postpone this until tomorrow because we're pretty close. Well. And we were close, and we could have wordsmithed it that would have redeemed her reputation, wouldn't have made him fully say, I did all of this. But that night, the White House issued statements that the reason she'd not filed was that her lawyers had advised that she didn't have a case and that her family was against her. And part of the undertaking was that once he'd make that statement, neither he nor his people would say anything more about it because we didn't want any more trashing of her. Now, I knew at that point that we had to have a tolling agreement to make sure they obeyed what they undertook to do. And I wrote a note to Bob. I said, unless the tolling agreement is back on the table, we're filing suit because I trust you, Bob, but I can't trust your client or his people to keep the bargain that is being negotiated.
And after filing, my understanding of the Supreme Court suit, and again, you're the expert, I'm not, was that it wasn't to squelch the suit so much as to postpone it until after he was no longer in office.
No, he said he couldn't be sued. He could not be sued. Only important cases could really be sued, but a Civil Rights Act case apparently was not an important case, and there'd have to be a prudential decision as to which ones were and were not. The history of this, by the way, a lawsuit was filed. Richard Nixon generated a lot of suits, both while he was in office and after he was in office. A lawsuit was filed by the fellow by the name of Fitzgerald, who was a whistleblower in the Department of Defense, who Nixon got rid of by abolishing the 18 people that held that job.
Right, right.
That got him for.
That was different from the Saturday Night Massacre, but similar
kind of thing.
Right.
Fitzgerald got some remedies under the Merit System Protection Act, but he also sued Nixon, which carried on after, and didn't sue him even while he was president, but sued him for causing emotional distress, other consequential damages. That was taken to the Supreme Court. The ACLU filed an amicus brief saying the president should be required to for acts in the course of his duties. Supreme Court said no in a 5-4 decision. Said no, the president is immune for official conduct in the outer perimeter of his duty. And since this was in at least that outer perimeter, he could not be sued. When we filed our suit, That was a precedent, but not a precedent that was helpful or hurtful to us because it was for official conduct. By implication, perhaps personal conduct could be sued for. So we called the ACLU, and they were reluctant at first, but agreed that yes, we took that position before, and with even more force, we should take it now. So they filed an amicus in the case, and think of it this way too. Turn it around. For personal conduct, none of us, we're all accountable to justice, no matter what position. Nobody's King's X in this country. We're all equal before the bar of justice. Well, if the president could not be sued for personal wrongdoing or personal civil matters, that would mean, as an example, that suppose he borrowed on a house and he defaulted,
right,
and they'd have to wait until after.
I have no problem with the idea that you can sue the president. What I have a problem with is while he's in office, and that's interesting because I didn't realize that really wasn't the issue in the Supreme Court case. What is to prevent, and we only got about a minute left, so I may have to ask after the break, but what is to prevent someone from filing a suit against every president of the United States? It really strikes me that someone could file a suit against George Bush just to ask him that cocaine question that he refuses to answer.
Well, it could. In fact, there were some copycat suits after this. They were handled pretty quickly. The justice system knows how to get rid of a frivolous lawsuit pretty quickly. And those things were all dismissed.
Well, not necessarily. If you have a claim and it gets to an issue, dispute
well,
issue
well,
of fact.
Well, but you're thinking about somebody sold me cocaine several years ago. Where's the cause of action?
Well, it's harm. Cocaine harms. We had doctor bills. Who knows? We have to take a break. Folks, if you want to join this discussion, it's easy to do. You can take on Gil or me. Just pick up the phone and dial 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Let's
My name is David Bell. I am a resident of Virginia's 11th Congressional District, and I ask Representative Tom Davis to initiate or support investigations into violations of the law by President Bush and his administration.
Tom Davis, my name is Jean Reynolds, and I'm one of your constituents. I want you to join immediately with other members of Congress to begin an investigation of the criminal acts that George Bush has committed.
I'm Nick Spangler of Ashland, Virginia, and I would like our troops to come home and Bush to get out of office.
My name is Nancy Maynard. I live in the 11th Congressional District, and this message is for Tom Davis. I'm asking you to please investigate for impeachment.
My name is Bruce Smith. I live in the 11th Congressional District in Woodbridge, Virginia. I want Congressman Davis to support the investigation of President Bush and Vice President Cheney and those that foisted this war on us.
Hello, Congressman Davis. I'm Carrie Plonson from the 11th Congressional District, and I'd like you to take immediate action to investigate George Bush and his offenses in leading this country into a war that's unwarranted and there is no solution for.
We have to impeach. I am just appalled that we would not, quote, waste our time with impeachment. The message to the world has to be that Bush and Cheney are guilty of international war crimes about which we can't do anything. We can do a lot about the crimes committed within the U.S. Constitution.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing everything from suing presidents of the United States to impeaching presidents of the United States. We've talked about Richard Nixon. We're now on Bill Clinton. And I assure you, we will get to George W. Bush. My guest is Gil Davis. He is a former federal prosecutor and a former attorney for Paula Jones. Gil, welcome back.
Thank you.
We were talking before the break about your suit against Bill Clinton. And it's interesting because I think, as you've conceded, Bill Clinton wasn't saying he could never be sued. He was saying he couldn't be sued while he was president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had agreed, and this is the part I didn't know, if he had agreed with you to wait,
we could have had a tolling of the.
And that was something your client was willing to agree to.
Well, we were willing to, there's a little bit of a distinction here, because we were willing to enter into a settlement with a statement. And the tolling would be a period of time where she would preserve her action just in case she got trashed after that. So there wouldn't even have been a lawsuit at all.
Oh, okay. But there had to be a settlement. You weren't agreeing to just sort of toll and make no statement
It never came up.
Really?
That part never came up.
Let me move on, though, because as you've pointed out, that was a case in his personal capacity. It seems to me that, if anything, suing a president in his personal capacity is a relatively low interest to the American people. I know they got a lot of interest in Bill Clinton's case, but...
But not to maybe Paula Jones or the banker
him
money.
Exactly. It's very interested to the plaintiff, to Paula Jones. You know, if he hits someone with a car, that person is very interested. But it seems to me that we are nationally interested when the president abuses his official capacity. So ironically, when you have lawsuits that can go for relatively small things, I mean, sexual harassment and not paying on a loan are not tiny, but they're certainly not like causing a war or putting people in jail without an attorney or systematic torture, really the kinds of crimes that only the president can commit. And I think you would agree that the only real way to punish a president for committing crimes that only the president can commit, such as violating the Constitution or ignoring the Fourth Amendment or ignoring the Bill of Rights, is impeachment.
Not strictly. In fact, the Supreme Court said there were other things, including and the Court of Appeals in the Eighth Circuit also pointed this out. A president, like any politician, has a public approbation of conduct that can have political effect.
If he's running for re-election in his first term, but in his second term.
But the president has political capital also that can be diminished. I think we've seen some of it over the immigration issue, probably, that this president's capital has been diminished so that his ability to influence others on Capitol Hill, on both sides of the aisle, has been circumscribed. So there are other things. There are press issues that we have a pretty vigorous press in this country, and what they find out could lead to truly impeachable offenses, but those are things that the court said, hey, you know, this is not something that and in fact even a criminal case, and that was a big issue. There's never been a criminal case brought, could have been brought maybe against Richard Nixon as president. But some people think the exclusive remedy is impeachment.
We did have a vice president, Aaron Burr, who was convicted of treason. So we certainly can have a vice president convicted of treason.
And well, actually, he was acquitted. He was tried for 6 months in the hotel in Richmond. Not the hotel, but the federal building in Richmond.
I thought he was convicted.
No, he was acquitted.
He was acquitted.
He defended himself. It was all men on the jury, and he told the jurors that, does anybody think that I'm not guilty? They all thought he was guilty before the thing started. And he said, can you set your opinions aside and consider just the evidence? And they could, and he was acquitted.
Fine.
But he was tried.
But he was tried.
Jefferson, however, was required to obey a summons that John Marshall had given to him to produce some papers. There was a little deal.
Richard Nixon was required in U.S. v. Nixon to turn over the tapes.
That's correct.
Andrew Jackson was censured by the Congress.
Correct.
Here's the problem. You have a president that commits an act, all right, and we'll talk about the specifics because I have a lot in mind with George W. Bush, but refuses to talk about it. Now, Congress, you would agree, has a right to investigate that, to find out what happened. In the Libby case, we have a case where, at least according to Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, who knows the evidence better than you or I, you had a covert CIA agent who was working on weapons of mass destruction that was outed.
Well, that was...
According to his indictment, that happened.
Well, but that was... his indictment for Libby was for perjury in the investigation, and obstruction of justice.
The crime that was actually tried was
for
the crime
that.
Of obstruction of justice.
But in the indictment, it mentions
that Valerie Plame Wilson was a covert agent. It's actually in the indictment.
Well,
the judge said he didn't have to prove it.
Not at the time. That is where... The controversy has sort of arisen. It was pretty clear, apparently, to even Fitzgerald, that at the time that Libby was there, the issue of whether it was a crime that to out this person was the question whether she was a covert secret agent.
Well, that's not what Patrick Fitzgerald has said. What he said is that. In essence, Scooter Libby threw a bunch of sand in the face of the umpire to find out exactly what happened and who was behind this outing.
Let's assume that Libby, because he was convicted of it, assume he lied.
The jury found that he lied.
Yes, the jury found it, and he's been convicted.
So he's been convicted, and all the evidence, as Patrick Fitzgerald said, there's a cloud upon the White House. All of the evidence seems to point to Dick Cheney. Not that he had enough to convict him beyond a reasonable doubt, but had Scooter Libby told the truth, there is certainly a possibility that Patrick Fitzgerald would have enough evidence to convict Dick Cheney beyond a reasonable doubt. We'll never know. He threw sand in the face of the umpire, but what Patrick Fitzgerald says is there's a cloud upon the White House, and you had Cheney's writings, you know, to Scooter Libby in the margin. All right.
Well, ironically, there's also been some suggestion that some of that information had already from other sources been
he may have a defense. I don't know. The point is that here you have a guy who's going to jail to protect his higher ups. I mean that's the jury found.
No, he obstructed justice. That he obstructed justice
right.
by not telling
the truth to the prosecutors.
To the
Now what motive
to a
could
grand
he have?
Jury.
We had other
well,
people
Well, he could have lots of different
we have,
motives.
We have other people who talked about Valerie Plame Wilson. Carl Rove, we have Armstrong, I think, what's his name, in the State Department. We have people who talked about her, but told the truth to the special prosecutor. Libby lied, and Libby was the chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney. At least there's, a fair inference
that
he lied to protect his boss.
He lied primarily in that he had no recollection of ever outing her.
Here's my question. When you have what at least George Herbert Walker Bush called a traitor's act, the outing of a CIA agent, and you have at least a question of that in this case, and you're investigating it, you're trying to find out what happens, and the highest ranking person in the vice president's office lies and obstructs justice. All right, he's in jail. If the president of the United States were to pardon Scooter Libby and were to say, in effect, it doesn't matter that you lied to investigators, it doesn't matter that you covered up, it doesn't matter that you threw sand in the umpire, possibly to protect the vice president, I'm letting you free.
That would seem to suggest to America
that there's, where there's smoke, there's fire. That in fact, there was treason or some traitor's act.
Well, if there was fire, then Fitzgerald would not have gone out of business. If Scooter Libby was covering up, he had all the resources to investigate whether there's been a cover-up. Certainly more power in many ways than the Congress even has. And I'm not sure, I don't recall if Cheney testified. He may or may not have.
He did not testify.
Okay, so if there was significant evidence that he, or at least a possibility of it, that this was a crime that Libby committed at the behest of his boss, then you would have thought that Fitzgerald would have done that. But all of that aside, let's assume that Fitzgerald didn't do his job, didn't go after whether or not his boss, Libby's boss, had done this. Your question is, if the president pardons him, is there something underhanded or suspicious about that should cause him, for the pardon, to be impeached? Well, the president has pardon power.
True.
And they when he pardons people, they all have been convicted of crimes. These people are people who have
been a judge. As Libby has.
Same thing, and we had a little discussion before we went on the air. Bill Clinton's brother was pardoned. Susan McDougal was pardoned at the end of the day when he was leaving office. And no, in fact, I think probably Richard Nixon could have pardoned himself before.
No.
Absolutely, he could have. There's no restriction on.
He could have right before he resigned.
Right before he said,
pardoned himself of all crimes.
I'm pardoning Richard M. Nixon for crimes, any crimes committed.
I would hope that would be overturned. I can't.
Well,
imagine.
It can't. No, it is.
An absolute power to pardon himself.
Absolutely.
I'll check out my Constitution. That's an awful idea, and I think if it happened, we'd have an amendment pretty quick.
But it shows the extent of the president's pardon power. Some of them do it with people who they think have been rehabilitated. Others do it for political reasons. They may do it for familial reasons, as Bill Clinton did with his brother. So that power of the pardon, and interestingly, this president has not done it yet, and he has given probably the fewest pardons in recent memory.
But there's a big difference between pardoning for whatever reason, you don't think the justice was fairly applied or so forth, and pardoning a political person, someone who is in jail for what the special prosecutor called throwing sand in the referee. I mean, he is in jail for what the special prosecutor called a cover-up.
Well, you couldn't find obstruction of justice of the president because he did it to keep information from getting on him when he has the full right to do the act. He can't do it for that act.
I think he's protecting the vice president. Folks, if you want to call in, the toll-free number, 888-48-MARK. Be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish.
If you give someone a fish.
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. Take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetness, sir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
Turn it up, baby. Come on.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing how you deal with a runaway president. Everything from suing the president to impeachment. If you want to call in, it's easy to do. Pick up the phone and dial 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. My guest is Gil Davis. He is a former federal prosecutor and was the attorney for Paula Jones. A lot of you have written in on the blog. I want to go to the blog and show some of your comments. We have one from Madeline in Kansas. I have noticed all the talking heads on corporate-owned television discussing that Scooter should be pardoned. How blatant they try to fool the American public with sound bites, never looking at the seriousness of the original crime. Scooter is either a traitor to the United States of America or a toady for the Bush administration. Either is unacceptable to we, the people who love and honor our country. We also have Ed, who writes, Scooter Libby should be shot as a traitor, not jailed as a liar. His boss, El Duce, should be shot and then hung from a lamppost. Skip writes, impeachment? Mark, you are too nice of a guy. I think President Cheney and his pet goat should be sent to Abu Ghraib and then to all of the other secret torture prisons they have set up around the world. Let's see how fast they cry their little eyes out when subjected to 0.0000001% of what a single Iraqi went through these last years. Emotions are high, and I have to suggest to you that...
Do you have anything on the other side?
Actually, I don't. I do have writers that sometimes defend the president, but, you know, they're becoming fewer and far between.
Well, it's your show. I mean, they're probably groupies here, aren't they?
Well, not all. But here's the point. It's not just about Scooter Libby. To me, the most offensive thing, and my listeners pointed out, is the secret torture camps that we have all over the world. We're not reporting to Congress about secret prisons. Perhaps the most egregious, clear violation of the Constitution, in my view, is putting people in jail without giving them a right to an attorney, without even charging them with a crime, and including two American citizens, which, as you know, has been overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. But, of course, the Sixth Amendment says very clearly that the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial and be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to have an attorney represent him. This is a clear, express violation of the Bill of Rights. Now, we talked about the fact that if the president does some personal crime, sexual harassment or defaulting on a bank loan, maybe you can sue him, but that doesn't affect the American people. Like rounding up American citizens, putting them in prison, not charging them, and not giving them access to an attorney. It seems to me the only way to fight this is impeachment.
I am a hard-shell conservative Republican, but you're speaking to the choir when you say that. Not that it necessarily should result in impeachment, but I am concerned when an American citizen is held without an access to a lawyer and doesn't have all the rights that the Constitution guarantees him. And you are correct to say that the medium in which that was tested is the court system, and thankfully we have a tripartite government in which the courts are independent of the executive, and their rulings stand, and the president has to bow to those decisions. This was, of course, 9-1-1 changed a lot of attitudes about things as to what we ought to be doing. These folks were usually rounded up under the rubric of being enemy combatants, let alone being, American citizens.
But Gil Davis, we've had Red Scare in the 1920s. Well, we've had Joe McCrud in the 1950s. 9-11 is not that unusual compared to other events in American history.
Yeah, but you look at Lincoln and the abolition of habeas corpus.
But that's in the Constitution, as you know.
It is in the Constitution.
Let me just point this out, because you and I know this, most of our listeners don't know, that the Constitution expressly allows you to suspend habeas corpus in cases of rebellion. And I hear people say, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. Well, if you don't think the Civil War was a rebellion, I don't know what is. We haven't had a rebellion. We haven't had an invasion.
Well,
9/11,
a better example would
probably... And Bush suspended habeas corpus.
A better example would be FDR and rounding up the Japanese and putting them into concentration camps, basically.
Which was an awful decision.
Yeah. Now, they weren't mistreated so much. And a question here that you raise, have these people been tortured or mistreated? the only example that strikes me is maybe because I don't know enough really about it is this waterboarding business where.
Let me give you another example. All right, you're absolutely right about waterboarding. We certainly know about Abu Ghraib. Let me give you another example. A man by the name of Maher Arar. I don't even know if you remember his case. He was a Canadian citizen, born in Syria. He was changing planes in New York JFK Airport, going from Canada. I don't even remember where he was going. It certainly wasn't Syria. He was changing planes. We took him. We sent him to Syria, certainly not the most benign country in the world, where he was brutally tortured, brutally mistreated. Turns out he had no connection with any terrorist group whatsoever. And
you're talking about these rendition, the people that
extraordinary rendition is a euphemism for it. I call it sending him away to be tortured. You know, you can call it outsourcing torture. We can call it extraordinary rendition if you'd like. But it seems to me that whether it's extraordinary rendition, secret prison camps, holding American citizens without trial, yes, in 4 or 5 years, sometimes U.S. courts come to the right decision. But when you have a president that's literally throwing away the Bill of Rights, it seems to me that that is the strongest case for impeachment.
Well, they've made bows to it. The question is on that how in its proportionality. The president is not, like you or I, a lawyer. We would hope that he had civics classes when he was in school and that he swore to protect the Constitution of the United States. When
he did swear.
He did. I have some questions about those things. Are they things that the, you have just as a matter for the public to want to go through? As you know, this is not a pleasant experience to put any president in the box.
Nor is it a pleasant experience to be tortured.
Well, no, but if you use waterboarding and this other as an example, Al Qaeda in Iraq has a manual to kill our soldiers with knives in the eyeballs and blow torches on their
to a higher standard
of course we
than
do.
Al Qaeda.
And that's the difference between our country and others.
You would agree that it's perfectly proper and appropriate for Congress to investigate all of these details and to find out every detail about what's going on, and that a president who would withhold such information from the appropriate congressional committees, that may be grounds for impeachment.
I think, a president would probably, if he withheld it, assert some
executive privilege
or whatever. Now that
that's that, not in the Constitution.
No, but it has been litigated, and there is such a thing. It is a thing that the courts have recognized. The question is the legitimacy of it and the scope of it. So if the president says that, you can have a battle between those two branches of government as to what the president must do. I think everyone, and even you, Mark, would probably agree that there are certain things that the president hears in his office, talks to his people about, that really are not things that should be in the public domain.
If except it's not now, a violation of the Constitution or the law, I have no problem with executive privilege.
Yeah, so I think you probably would also agree that the assertion of that should be sorted out, and if he's saying that there's national security interests here, these hearings should be private in Congress.
That's fine, but Congress still has the right to find out the information.
I think they do. I think Congress does, and I think some of the things I'd like to know myself. But do we know today what would be an impeachable offense? And that's your question.
Let's talk about one. You point out the president is not a lawyer, and true, he is not. There was a time, though, when he had a whole host of lawyers disagree with him. And that time was testified to by someone you said was a friend of yours, James Comey, the former assistant attorney general, deputy attorney general of the United States, number two in the Justice Department, at a time when number one, John Ashcroft, was sick with emergency gallbladder surgery. Basically, at least Comey hasn't said this, but the press accounts are, this was all about warrantless wiretapping. Basically, wiretapping, spying on hundreds of millions of Americans without a warrant, which the Fourth Amendment requires. It's one of my favorite amendments. I'll read it briefly. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course, now there have been exceptions to that now, too.
There are, but the courts have found them. In this case, you had number one lawyer in the United States, John Ashcroft, say this is blatantly illegal. You had number two lawyer, James
which give
Comey.
Him and give Ashcroft credit.
I give Ashcroft credit
while he
for
while
that.
He is sick in his hospital
that's
bed.
Right. I give him
he was
full
not
props
going
for
to
that.
Go that far to deprive American citizens.
I've
of
I've
had their
lots
civilized.
Of problems with Ashcroft, but the fact that this is a man who did all kinds of things that I found, frankly, over the line.
Are we talking about Ashcroft or
Ashcroft? Or, that even he wouldn't agree to it tells me this was way over the line.
I agree. What was way
Comey
over the line.
Said it was over the line. Even Ted Olson, who defended Bush and Bush v. Gore, Solicitor General of the United States, number three, said it was over the line. And what happens? Alberto Gonzalez comes in. Comey testified that he thought it was a phone call from the president. He comes in and he says, he tries to even though he knows Comey is an acting attorney general, he tries to convince the sick John Ashcroft to sign an executive order that he and Andy Carter prepared. He ignores the acting attorney general. He marches out. After Ashcroft says, you blatantly can't do this, and someone in the White House signs the executive order. The president signs the executive order. Somehow, for 2 days, this is authorized until finally everyone's planning to resign. Ashcroft, Comey, Olson, FBI, and they finally talk the president out of this. Now, I don't know whether the president ordered Alberto Gonzalez into that room or not, but when the president was asked whether or not he ordered Alberto Gonzalez in that room or not, he refused to answer the question. He said, I'm not going to go into that. That's all secret. When, of course, the
President of the United States, George Bush. The President of the United States told Ashcroft that he wanted the program.
Told Gonzalez to go in that room and try to trick a sick man into signing on to it, which is at least how Comey, he didn't get the phone call. Apparently, Ashcroft's wife did. But
well, a pretty seamy thing.
It's a very seamy thing.
I agree with that.
The president has said you have no right
to
investigate.
Gonzalez, is the attempt...
Let's start with Gonzalez before we get to the President of the United States. I think enough has been shown against Alberto Gonzalez that at the very least articles of impeachment should be considered against him for perjury, lying to Congress, for violation of the Hatch Act in terms of, we have what Monica Goodling said. Basically, they would constantly ask for the affiliation of federal prosecutors. You know, he says, I have no idea how these people got on the list. Will someone rid me of this ignorant priest, to quote Thomas A. Beckett? And yet he and his number two has resigned. His number two's chief of staff has resigned. We have five people who have resigned. Ashcroft, it seems to me, is sitting on a sinking ship. And
you're talking about Gonzalez.
Excuse me. I am talking about Alberto Gonzalez. Yeah. He's on a sinking ship. And Congress tried a no-confidence vote, and the Republicans said, oh, well, you know, no confidence, that's not in the Constitution. Well, impeachment is in the Constitution.
Well, one of the things probably we ought to be thinking about, I mean, impeachment is a blunt instrument of a pretty significant one. But what we ought to be thinking about is the decency to remain in the office under this circumstance. You remember... was a Marvin K. movie, and Dr. Seuss said, Marvin K. Mooney, won't you please go now? Won't you go by car? Won't you go by cow? Won't you go?
I don't remember that particular,
please go.
Right.
I think it's time.
But how do we get rid of him? He's going.
Well, one of the things I think I think the president needs to understand is that the credibility and the independence and the good judgment of the Attorney General is important to the delivery of justice in the United States. And he has lost that confidence, I think, across the board. And I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats on that subject. And it's time.
James Comey said, I think, very, very appropriately, that if Americans can't trust federal prosecutors, if they can't trust that judgment will be fair, he said he has to convince juries in all kinds of cases, including political cases. Right now, there's a bribery case against William Jefferson of Louisiana. Now, I have no doubt in my mind that man is guilty, just frankly, from the money in the freezer. It's enough to convince me. But if people think that prosecutors are appointed for political reasons, and we now know that it is true, that, in fact, Monica Goodling, at least, and this 33-year-old woman graduate of the 143rd best out of 143 law schools in the nation, apparently was in charge, at least to some extent, of choosing our nation's prosecutors, that she did so based on political affiliation, you can have juries. They're going to say, hey, you know, we don't trust you at all. We're going to nullify this decision.
Okay, but now you're talking about the United States attorneys themselves.
Right. I am.
And traditionally, and this goes back to the time when we first had United States attorneys, the president's party normally is a qualification to be selected. Now, in most instances, these are good and honest and competent people, and I think they mostly were in this case that they tried to get rid of.
We're going to take a break. The phone number is 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
History has demonstrated that violence only begets greater violence. And injustice only begets greater injustice. This is not the tradition of our great nation. This is not how we want the United States to be known around the world. We have another tradition that we think ought to prevail. One that is more just and more powerful. There is a better way. If we truly want peace and security, then we must work hard for justice. If you're concerned that we've become a nation whose national policies are grounded in beliefs that are centered on a line embedded in BS, then don't miss Escape from Orwellianation, a talk show in which concerned regular citizens like you and me, not self-serving media spinmeisters, wade through the barrage of newspeak and doublethink that pollutes public discourse today. Big brother, big business, big media, and the big national parties who collude to keep we the people afraid and in the dark would prefer that you not watch. Show them who's in charge. Tune in to Escape from Orwellianation right here on Channel 10.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Gil Davis. Gil, it is true that the president appoints members of their own party. Clinton did it. George Herbert Walker Bush did it. But what was unusual in the attorney prosecutor case was that in midstream, to have a whole slew of prosecutors be kicked out, and if you notice, each and every one of them had some political thing going on. You had in San Diego, of course, a Republican congressman, Duke Cunningham, being prosecuted by the prosecutor there. You had a number of voting cases. In each and every case, it seemed that it was all about voting, and that's why at least all signs seemed to point that it was Karl Rove making the decision, not Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I know this, that for whatever reason the president can do that, it's probably his only real power except to discharge the attorney general and fire them to affect anything, if that's what he intended to do. But
if it's done as a cover-up, I mean, the famous Saturday Night Massacre, Richard Nixon got in trouble. He had the right to fire these people, but it's one of the things, I think, that led to articles of impeachment because they were prosecuting him.
Well, the Saturday Night Massacre is what you're talking about, and ended up having only down to Bork, who was the Solicitor General that carried out the action and fired the special prosecutor. Well, here... there's a group of them. I mean, they looked at, 16, 18.
Apparently they looked at 50 or 60.
Well, they must have. This is sort of a wholesale thing. I think it's probably a tin ear to the proprieties. These people, they were different. When you talk about political things, they were different things. Some were looking at an election fraud, among other things. They all have busy offices. But I think what really rankled was, even with them, is that they were then trashed.
Sure.
Rather than say, look, you serve at the pleasure of the president, and
well, you had Tony Snow,
and we're going to give you a medal and whatever.
And number, and in fact, it was McNulty, number two, also said that they were fired for performance reasons, and then they switched 180 and said, no, they weren't fired for performance reasons, they were fired for political reasons, because their performance was exemplary. They couldn't attack
that's right.
it. Here's the thing. Congress is investigating this. Gonzalez doesn't know what happened. McNulty doesn't know what happened. Their chiefs of staff, Elston and Sampson, they don't know what happened. Monica Goodling says, you know, I didn't make the decision. You know, no one made the decision, and yet they keep talking with Karl Rove. Now, Karl Rove is required by the special prosecutor, Attorney Fitzgerald, to save his emails as part of the Scooter Libby, the Tradergate investigation, not as part of this. And they're missing hundreds of emails. Indeed, millions of White House emails are missing, including hundreds of Karl Rove's emails. Let me suggest to you that that is similar to the 18-and-a-half-minute gap of Watergate.
Well, you have things that aren't there in both.
In suspicious circumstances. Well, but he's required by law to keep them, and he didn't.
Well, as I recall, and I don't, you have probably a better command of the factual basis of this, but as I recall, wasn't the explanation that this was a mistake? It was not. It was something that had a glitch in their computer.
Yeah,
system.
Yeah. 18 minutes got erased. It just happens, you know. I mean, you push the wrong button and boom.
But you're analogizing it to the 18 minutes. And maybe. And you ask, is it an area to take a look at? Probably.
Okay, but Congress the president is stonewalling. And let me suggest to you that the only way to stop the stonewall, Congress says we want these documents. Congress has issued a subpoena for these documents. And Karl Rove says, I don't have them. Now, you're a federal prosecutor.
When you issue
a subpoena and
someone
says...
you can't get what you don't have.
Well, but you can. If you're a federal prosecutor, you can attack someone for destruction of evidence, for obstruction of justice.
Well, if you were the author, the creator of the destruction, yes... perhaps, but what was the obstruction? I mean, was it Fitzgerald's case that he was investigating? Was it some internal things that they were talking about getting rid of prosecutors? These are not, to my mind, the same thing. I mean, the Fitzgerald matter and the firing of the prosecutors.
No, but if you're ordered to save your documents as part of an official investigation.
But that.
And they're missing... I mean, it seems to me that's obstruction of justice.
Well,
I don't know how else you describe
it's not
it.
It's only obstruction if you intend it to be.
You have to prove intent.
So your question on
he had motive.
Should
he had,
the Congress look into it? That's up to the Congress. And they are looking into it. And I would say if they choose to do that, that's not inappropriate.
Well, one of the things that my listener writes, and we can show this on here, this is from, who wrote this? Long thing, by Robert. Robert writes, I do not see enough votes in Congress to impeach the president.
He's right.
The Democratic majority will require Republican sway votes. It is a long, dragged-out process to allow many other important issues to go unchecked or scrutinized. Let me admit, right at the outset, that we don't have the votes. And let me suggest to you that one of the real Republican mistakes in the Bill Clinton era was the political mistake of impeaching the President of the United States. Because when you don't have the votes to convict, you impeach the president, it's almost like they say, you know, if you're going to attack the king, you better kill him. Because if you shoot the king, he's still very powerful, he can cause a lot of damage.
That's an interesting point that you make, which is one that I made constantly on programs for 3 years, and particularly as the impeachment got underway, the positions of the two sides. And you could mark it down politically. The Republicans all said it's all about perjury. The Democrats said no, it's all about sex. I mean, that was the mantra that each side had. And the Republicans took the position that he should be impeached for the perjury. The Democrats said no, we shouldn't be doing that because you can lie about things of a personal nature like that. Well.
And there's some truth to that. I mean, if a woman gets on the stand and you ask her her age, you know this as a lawyer, as do I, and she says I'm 55 when she's really 65, if it's not material to the case, then it has to be material to be perjury.
I think it was pretty material to the Paula Jones case.
Whether he arrests Monica Lewinsky, is it material to Paula Jones? I mean, it's a different
point. No. We had said that a pattern of conduct which shows MO, it's hard to understand how in a room, when a cold call that the governor, then governor, would assault her with
Paula Jones's claim was that it wasn't consensual, right?
Well, she didn't have any sex with him, but he tried to do that with her.
But there was no question in the Monica Lewinsky case that it was consensual. So to argue it was the same thing.
No, that he has this libido that demands it, and you can show a pattern of conduct. Indeed, the Eighth Circuit was ready to reverse that case when the president ended up finally settling it.
But we don't know that.
Oh, I was there. I heard the argument, and it would have been a 2-1 decision, just like the former one was, because they were pretty strong on it. Yeah, of course you can. The case goes forward in their view. But that's.
But moving on to the politics of impeachment.
I want to tell you. I think that it was that each side in the Clinton years was advocating for a position that was against their political interest. One of the things that the Democrats should have wanted, for political reasons, is to get rid of Clinton and put Al Gore as president because he'd be an incumbent president. On the other hand, you didn't want to have the president convicted. You wanted him wounded if you were some of the hard-shell Republicans. And frankly, in my opinion, that the impeachment led to George Bush's election. In fact,
really?
You could even say the filing of the Paula Jones case.
Well, let's say
this
selection,
reason.
Since he wasn't really
elected. Well, that's another issue. We could debate that. No. But the reason that it did is in that close election, and there were all sorts of things that could have changed. In Tennessee and West Virginia, it was a gun issue, and had Gore not been so strong on that, fine. But what was clear undertone of all of Bush's campaigning, I will restore dignity and honor to the Oval Office.
And here we have a president who has extraordinary rendition, sending people off to be tortured, taking American citizens, putting them in jail without trial, without an attorney, systematic torture. We have warrantless wiretapping of hundreds of millions of Americans.
I'm not going to accept all of the
but my point is there's enough smoke there that while I'm going to agree with you that politically it's not time for impeachment, I'm going to agree with Robert that we have to prove our case that it is not time politically for impeachment. I think there's enough there that if Congress were to pursue an investigation, the president may try to obstruct justice and hide it, but we need to show all these things
to the American people. Then your guys are wimps. They're not going
to
do it.
Well, they're doing it. They're starting to, and they need to do more. And Henry Waxman and John Conyers, more power to you. Get out those subpoenas. Get Karl Rove in front of you. Let's prove this stuff. That's all the time we have. Bill Davis, thank you very much for coming here on The Inside Scoop. Tune in every week at this time, Monday, 7 p.m. for The Inside Scoop. We're also on Sundays at 6:30. This is Mark Levine signing off.